Adam Clayton, and Bono. The current tour for U2 is called the Zoo TV Tour.
And the stage show, as you'll hear tonight, is something extraordinary, with Trabant cars suspended above the band and a bank of TV screens completely behind the four members on stage. So let's not muck around as we join Ian Rogerson right now on the road with U2 in Britain.
Queen Anu and Slounge of All. Here I am in beautiful downtown Glasgow. Ah, queen. I must admit I have had a couple of malts. My name's Ian Rogerson and BP Fallon is the disc jockey here at the Glasgow Exhibition Centre. He is in a mirror ball Trabant and he's just finished playing music and I'm just working my way up now to the mixing desk. Well, here I am. I'm at the Glasgow Exhibition Centre, which is this enormous barn-like building where they do lots of exhibitions here in Glasgow. Now, I'm sitting at the mixing desk, which is about 400 yards away from the stage. Now, this is where all the lighting and the mixing happens. Joe O'Herlihy is a man who's been doing the sound work for U2 since virtually year dot, and he's got the whole thing sorted out here. The mixing desk is all happening, and you can see the stage from here, and on stage, the normal equipment you would see with a band when they're on stage, which is the stacks and everything sorted out, the lighting. But on top of that, four Trabants, which are these Russian cars, are suspended from the ceiling, multicoloured, and with laser lights coming out of the Trabants. And halfway through the show, these cars actually take on a really sort of ominous feel. But also, underneath the Trabants are these television screens. Not huge, big, wide ones, just your normal at-home television screens, but stacks of them. Like, I'm talking about 300 of these things. Now, all the way through the show, these television screens are throwing up all different images, particularly during the fly, where they're throwing up these amazing slogans of, you know, eat more, stuff like this, you know, incredible 90s-style slogans. But this is all generated out of this area just over here, which is the television studio they've got set up here. It's a mini television studio right next to the mixing desk. Hi, folks. How are you? And this is where all the stuff is generated that goes on the screen. Now, this isn't something that's thrown together slapdash. In fact, it's very well worked out, except for the bits where they pull stuff in off the satellite. They have a satellite dish positioned outside of the building, which is pulling stuff in from the satellite at any time, so they can have commercials from Germany, you know, that kind of stuff. And it all comes together in this incredible sound visual presentation that is amazing. I saw it last night and I'm actually quite vibed about seeing it tonight, as you can probably tell. So they're just about to come on stage and boy, I'd like to be able to hang around talking with you, but I can't. So here, have a listen to U2 themselves.
Triple J, we are in the foyer of the Holiday Inn in Glasgow. Sitting with me is Edge at the moment. How are you?
I'm great. Really great.
I saw the Sheffield gig last night at Sheffield Arena, and if that's any indication of what the audience reaction's been to the Zoo TV tour, it's pretty incredible. Have all the audience has been like that?
Last night, you know, north of England, it's kind of... it's always quite rowdy, and last night was... Started out a little quiet, but it got really, really good by the end. The reactions have varied quite a lot, from confused at the beginning of the show to then towards the end, most people start to really get into it. Mm. And then some audiences have just been right there from the word go.
I mean, it was incredible, just the singing that was going along from the audience like that. That reaction was incredible. I've never really seen that happen. I guess it must be part of the football feeling that's come through. If we could just go back a little bit to probably the start of Achtung Baby. It was it New Year's Eve 1989 in Dublin when Bono said, we're going away to think it all up again. What was the feeling around that time?
I think the feeling was that we'd concluded that phase, that we brought something to an end, mm. which was so that we'd started with the Joshua Tree album and finished with the tour that came after Rattle and Hum, mm. which we in fact started in Australia, and the Lovetown tour.
That's right.
And the feeling really was that we simply wanted to do that, go away and just get maybe some input, mm. Get away from the touring album cycle, mm. and just do some other things for a while and see where that led us to. So we took a little time off, and not too much time off. Bono and I got involved in this Clockwork Orange project in the UK for the Royal Shakespeare Company, and we followed that up with a. We did a track for Red Hot and Blue, the Night and Day track, the Cole Porter song. Both of those were really quite uncharacteristic of what we'd been doing up until then. So it was like an opportunity for us to explore other music and other techniques, and gave us an insight into what else was going on in the culture at the time. You know, it was our entry into the hardware, the techniques of dance remixing and whatever. And we got given Night and Day to do, which was, on one level, was great because it's really one, I think, one of his best songs. But also was slightly daunting because it's his most famous song.
And, yeah.
It's been covered by more people than anything else he's written. And we, I suppose we felt we wanted to put a new complexion on it, do something with it that was new and that was ours and that was...
It was quite a spare 90s. Recording in some ways.
Yeah, we tried different approaches to it and we had difficulty with the music because Cole Porter's songs, the chords he uses are very fruity, you know, very... I mean, they're not really rock and roll chords.
No.
So we took quite a lot of liberties with the music.
Mm.
Keeping the original melody, we changed a lot of the backing. It was good fun. You know?
The thing that appeals to me about Achtung Baby, it is very much an album of the 90s like that. It has that, dare I say, that edge about it. Was this something that you thought you'd do? Oh, we're just being joined by
Hi,
Adam.
Guys.
Hi, Adam. How are you?
Ian good Rogerson. Morning on the phone.
That's all right.
The usual.
Yeah.
Usual touring scenario. Spend most of your time on the telephone in meetings or...
I can imagine. Afternoons before a gig, how are they... sort of run? Are they very busy times?
It's chaos.
We generally like to have tea at around 4 o'clock.
Because they are very late nights.
Yeah, you're, I mean, the trouble with being on the road for this long is that you actually get used to this way of life.
Yeah, you think this is normal and that everyone else is kind of crazy.
Yeah, so you go home and it's very, very strange for the first couple of weeks.
I was just talking to Edge about getting into when you were starting to record Achtung Baby and the feeling at that time of sort of soaking up the sounds or changing it as it was. Was it a bit of a reinvention in some ways?
Well, you've got to keep yourself inspired. You know? We really went into the album with... the idea that we wanted to move into new terrain and we weren't quite sure how we were going to make it our own, you know, because that's for us a very important part of the creative thing is it's fine to move into new areas to experiment, but if it's successful it's because you've actually made it your own at the end, that it's something that sounds like you and that you don't like it because it sounds like something else that you like. So, it was I think we learned a lot during the process of the making of the album, and we were listening to a lot of different music, a lot of techno music, a lot of quite heavy European dance music, stuff like KMFDM.
Yeah.
Some of the sort of psycho metal stuff.
Oh, what, Einstein Neubarten?
Yeah, the Young Gods.
Yeah.
You know, Insect, or this heavy dance, you know, music from Belgium and Germany. And we're absorbing a lot of the sonic ideas that they were playing around with, the distorted vocals and the
mix the vocals right down and...
Yeah, just, you know, techniques of creating extreme sounds using and abusing the technology. And... We messed around a lot in the studio. We experimented a lot, probably more than we had since maybe Unforgettable Fire, where...
I was going to bring up Unforgettable Fire because that, in some ways it was much the same sort of situation, wasn't it?
Well, Unforgettable Fire was another album where we really went into the studio with a few ideas, but the process of recording was the creation of the record. It wasn't just the recording of songs that had already been prepared.
Yeah.
We actually went in, and during the course of the album, the whole identity of it started to emerge. And it's to do with your attitude to the studio, and it's something that Eno, I think, taught us, is that the studio itself can be a creative instrument. It doesn't have to be like a science laboratory
where you bring everything in
and it's you know, where it's controlled by men in white coats and, you know, technical instruments, that it actually is itself, the process is a creative process, and that the equipment is like a musical instrument and can be manipulated and can be used and is at the disposal of the artist as opposed to at the disposal of the technicians.
To see how far you can push it.
Yeah.
Mm. This is something I wanted to bring up because there seems to be a, particularly with you, Adam, and Larry, a sort of synergy going on there live-wise. There's just this incredible, I don't know whether bottom end to the sound is...
Yeah, I think
almost
it's
palpable. You can feel it in the body.
Yeah, I think it's very simple. We're just very loud.
So you didn't shoot the beer?
No, I shot him with a beer at the end. I shot two or three shots for the commercial of him with the beer. But I didn't shoot the beer product shots.
No,
that was done by some product shot guy.
That's tough.
Is that Italian beer?
Yes.
I mean,
it's great because it looks like it's all mine, you know, but I didn't even touch the product.
We're sitting backstage with Paul McGuinness, manager of the band, hopefully before the Fatima Manchas come on stage and we won't be able to hear ourselves think.
No, they've started.
Oh, that's them.
That's their first number, yeah.
Oh, it's not too bad. Paul, this must be one of the biggest tours, so to speak, that U2's ever partaken. Just equipment-wise.
Yeah, it's a bit of a horror story financially. We have about 110 people on the road, and we're playing buildings about, you know, small buildings about the size of the Sydney Entertainment Centre. Mm. This one has a capacity of 9,000, and the economics of that are a nightmare. We don't make money.
I would guess.
What we will do, though, is expand this show now. We've played it 60 times in North America and Europe, but 30 shows in North America, 30 shows in Europe, and we will now expand it into an outdoor production, which will use some of the same characteristics, some of the same elements, but will be much bigger and suitable for those big football stadiums in America this autumn, or this summer and autumn, and Europe the summer of 1993. That will be the time when we get paid.
Yes, okay.
Hi, Dale.
Hi,
Donald.
Paul McGuinness now.
Come
doing
in.
Some
I'm doing
major schmoozing. Hi, guys.
Right,
oh, God.
In.
Just check my change. I'd really like to buy a beer before the band gets back on. God, schmooze city.
No.
You're very
welcome.
Thank you very
much. Let me finish this interview in a minute.
Yeah. So where were we? Oh, yes. So you would end up in Europe next summer.
About, well, here's the plan at the moment. The last Zoo TV indoor show is tomorrow night in Manchester. That show, sadly, will never be performed again.
Mm.
We will then open up in North America about August the 11th in Giant Stadium, and we'll play August, September, October in North America outdoors and make some money, I hope.
Yeah. Well, then it's the bottom line, isn't it?
Well, somebody has to pay
for it.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know. Then possibly we'll go to Japan in November. That's not clear yet. And then I don't think at the moment we will be able to go to Australia because there are such big problems about playing outdoors in Australia. And the costs of getting there are so high.
Thanks to our local councils.
Well, it's a serious thing now. It's economically, now that the economy has deteriorated and the currency has deteriorated to the point where Australians are going to see, you know,
less and less
big bands because it's not viable unless you go outdoors, and you can't play outdoors in any
Australian city except for Adelaide, I think.
So in a way, what you've done is really test marketed the whole thing with this bunch of gigs, worked up the album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The show we wanted to do is the one we're performing now, yeah, indoors, and it has taken quite a while to develop a way of doing something like this outdoors.
Mm.
You haven't seen it yet, but
no,
you're about to see. Oh, you've seen the indoor show
last night.
You saw it in Sheffield. But you'll see that it's an idea that can, you've seen that it's an idea that can go outdoors.
It's a fantastic
idea.
Yeah. To me, it's almost like seeing the future like that because of the video interaction. It's just incredible.
Hmm.
And the band themselves, I mean, working with them, they seem not only really nice guys, but it seems like, I would guess you at the top have to deal with all the hard edges that go with life on the road. Would that be pretty true?
Well, I'm a fanatical and I would like to think effective delegator.
Mm.
What we try to do is hire very good people and let them get on with their jobs. And many of the people who are working on this tour have been with us for a long time. It tends to be the case that most of the senior people are Irish, though the crew includes people from Britain, New Zealand, Australia, a lot of Americans. It's a pretty international group of people, and it's not like being in the army. The pressure to do your work well tends to be almost a social pressure. Nobody wants to be on that crew if they're not incredibly good at their gig.
Yeah.
And people who are not very good just suddenly want to go.
Mm. All right, I understand.
That's quite how it happens. Yeah.
It's like osmosis.
Yeah, it's not like taking orders.
Yeah.
And so in that respect, it's one of the things I always liked about rock and roll is the collegiality of it.
Mm.
And to be with this large group of people doing something quite difficult day after day after day in sometimes adverse circumstances around the world, you're going to spend so much time with those people, it would be a big mistake if they were assholes.
Triple J Melbourne 107.5.
We're backstage at the Glasgow gig. Bono, 11 trucks, 4 buses, satellite dish, any number of boxes of television, not to mention the mixing and the small television studio I've got here. I mean, does this all this stuff freak you out?
Yeah, we've never been scared of technology, you know. It's the only thing that you've got to be careful of is that it does not dictate to you. You're dictating your terms. But, you know, using it. I like to call it abusing technology because often that is the most interesting ideas come out of an unorthodox use of what is, you know, maybe quite a straightforward piece of hardware. You can make them do things they weren't designed to do at all, and that often is, you know, where you get the most interesting results. You got to move on, you know. You really have to move on, and I don't think as a band we would function in an atmosphere of, you know, doing the same old thing. It never works for us. We always find that to keep ourselves interested, we have to take on new ideas and get into new territory. So with this record, you know, there was things that we wanted to try, things, other music we were listening to at the time that was inspiring us, and you know, it's still, listening to it now, you know, it still sounds to me like the blues, but it's our kind of blues, you know. It's definitely a more European blues. It's through a certain kind of filter. I don't know how to describe it really, but we knew the kind of sounds we were looking for. We wanted something quite abrasive, quite industrial, you know, the 90s blues.
We're backstage at the Glasgow gig, and I'm speaking to Christina. Christina, you're the, how would you say, the belly dancer of the show, aren't you?
Yeah.
How did you get in contact with the band?
Well, the tour started in Florida, which is where I live. They were in Lakeland, Florida, rehearsing for about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
before the start of the tour, and I had seen a video for Mysterious Ways, and since I lived not very far from there, and I figured, you know, they could possibly, you know, be interested in using a dancer in their show, because I know that they're, like, really open-minded, yeah. And they, you know, bring people up on stage a lot, so I gave my card to one of the crew members who passed it on to one of the production managers, and he came out and he said he would be interested in using me, but that he wanted it to be a surprise for the band. So he asked if I could show up at the dress rehearsal, and we'd see how it goes. And turned out that they really liked it, and they asked me to come back and dance for the opening night. And I didn't actually get to dance that night, because everything was really hectic since it was the first
opening night worries.
Yeah, and they were going to talk to a Russian cosmonaut and just all this technical
weird stuff.
So I didn't get to dance, but then the next day I got a phone call from Bono. He was calling from Miami, and he said that they had talked about it afterwards, and they thought it was a mistake that they didn't use me, that they should have used me. And he asked if I would have time to fly down to Miami that night to dance. And it was already 5 o'clock, so I didn't take a shower, I didn't get anything to eat, I just threw all my stuff in a bag and ran off to the airport, and I got there like shortly before the show. And
you must have been incredibly excited.
I was pretty frazzled, actually, because I wasn't used to flying. It was like the first flight I had been on in many years. Mm. And just, you know, the fact that I would be dancing in front of 10,000 people.
Yeah,
and
it's a bit of a worry. Yeah. Have you got used to it now? Are you blasé about it, or is it still exciting?
I'm pretty used to it now. I'm not really aware that there's that many people out there, because when the lights are on me, I don't really see anybody except for, you know, a few faces that are right around the B stage where I dance.
Yeah.